You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at SchachterEnergyReport.ca. That's Schachter, S-C-H-A-C-H-T-E-R, EnergyReport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to HowStreet.com Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you again, Jim.
How are things at the Schachter Energy Report, and how can our listeners subscribe?
Well, we're busy with, late February, we're at $65, and we're optimistic about higher oil prices. As you know, we thought in Q2 we'd find out that OPEC doesn't really have the ability to increase production. In Q3, we were mentioning that we thought there would be a decline in global inventories, and that we had a forecast of an average price of $70. Well, with the start of the war, you can throw that in the garbage can. That's not what's happening. We ran up to 119, 48 per barrel Sunday night. Today we were up 465 to 88.10. So we've got quite a swing here in the numbers. And again, the question is, how long will the war last? What are the objectives? Do they just want to get rid of the ballistic missiles and the drones and the factories producing them? Do they want to get rid of the weapons grade almost material that they have to make 11 bombs, which it was the comment that we got from the president when he said he wanted surrender. So it's crazy. Today there was comments about ships that are owned by Iran heading to California where they would attack with drones. Talk about mines, small little boats dropping two mines apiece, and they knocked out the 50 plus ships of the official Navy. There's hundreds of these boats that can take one or two mines. It won't take long before they block the Straits of Hormuz. So there's lots of things moving every day. There's new stuff intraday. There's new stuff. So we're at 88.10 at the close today, Wednesday the 11th. I think people are saying it could be over in a day or two. I don't. If you look at the map in Bloomberg, we did Eye on Energy today, which people can just go on Substack and get access to. We put a map there from Bloomberg, which shows the country of Iran. And the eastern part of the country has very little, a military action against facilities there, while western Iran is, it looks like it's, Swiss cheese with the number of attacks that they've done there. So if there's a lot of drone and missile factories in the eastern part of the country, they've got a couple weeks of work here still to do. And then mines that are in the water, then that's going to be, U.S. Navy is going to have to get in there and take them out. And to me, the war doesn't end until there's no drone or missile attacks going against, the Arab countries, the UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and, of course, Israel. So this thing, is not, the market's discounting a quick result. I'm not sure that's the market's discounting the right thing.
Now, after our peak oil price of $119.48 Sunday, there was a big pullback. In a press conference Monday, President Trump said, we're going to see lower oil and gas prices. Do you think the prices of oil and gas are heading lower?
When the war is over and the objectives have been met and nobody has to be concerned that there's going to be any further attacks on the Arab countries, and there's an attacks against desalination plants, and most of the fresh water that they have doesn't have indigenous resources, so it's all coming 70, 80, 90% in different countries comes from desalination plants. Tehran is running out of water on its own, and they need to be doing desalination as well in that country. So, the nuclear weapons grade material to me is an issue. I think lower is only when all of these issues are clearly resolved, and you don't have to worry about something coming 6 months down the road and making it there. Where will we trade? I think we're in a $70-$80 environment post-war. The fact that we've had inventories come down, right now, Russia's been allowed to sell oil with no problems to India, 30 million barrels this week alone. And the price is interesting. Russia crude, just like Iranian and Venezuelan before the Americans moved in there, was selling at a big discount. So if the price of oil was, $70 for Brent, they were getting 40. Well, now, all of a sudden, with Brent being $90, 91, 92, they're getting 80, 85. So, Russia's revenue sources are really picking up. And the shadow fleet sitting with oil inventories are being moved into the buyers. Right now, we know for sure it's India, but China's probably going to be there. And if the Americans worry about a more lengthier period of time, they may remove sanctions totally and say, okay, Thailand, Vietnam, South Korea, Japan, you can buy that oil too. We saw the IEA announce the release of 400 million barrels, almost double what they did during right after the Russia invaded Ukraine. But given the world consumes 106 million barrels a day, and 20 million of it comes from the Middle East, that effectively they're saying we have cover for 20 days, and will this be done in 20 days? I'm not sure.
In a news conference, President Trump said the U.S. will ensure oil tankers navigating the Strait of Hormuz. He added that if necessary, oil tankers will receive Navy escorts, along with the threat to Iran that if they try to attack oil tankers, they'll pay a huge price. Is this likely enough to resume oil tanker travel through the Strait of Hormuz?
I'll give you a quick one, no, and then I'll go into it a little more. The key thing for companies that own oil tankers is, number one, they have to get insurance. They have to have the crews willing to go through the Straits of Hormuz. And yes, a Navy escort would help if they were able to knock out any of the incoming drones or missiles. But the Americans don't have the naval assets in the area. And, they're going to need Britain, France. They may even want China to help out to protect tankers going back and forth and have convoys where they can protect them, and Air Force over them as well. So a lot of logistics need to get into play for convoys to work. We know from World War II how long that took to get the convoy system from Canada and then States to Britain. I think in the same, with Asia. I think that, will this be a solution at some point? If necessary, yes. But time to get it in place, I don't think the Americans have prepared for that, and it's going to take a while to bring more naval assets into the area from them, and also the Brits have to commit, which they haven't. NATO countries have not committed, and the only one that probably could do it in a reasonable period of time would be China. And so again, I think President Trump and President Xi need to have a serious talk and then be able to work together on this one.
Mm-hmm. Could the significant pullback in oil be signaling that the war is close to ending?
Well, the pullback from 119 to 88, it's still, $30 premium to where it was before the war started. So there's still a big war premium in there. The market is discounting a short period of time. They're listening to the president, who says, I can call it over and say it's done. And yes, they have destroyed the Navy. They have destroyed the Air Force. They have destroyed a lot of the ballistic missile sites and the ballistic missile launchers. But they started it talking about the fact that they didn't want Iran to be a nuclear power. and yet there's nothing going on, no commentary about the amount of weaponry, uranium material, which the Iranians told, Witkoff in their discussions, that we have enough material to upgrade in a week to, or 10 days, to nuclear weapon material. And right now, the 60% where we are today can be dirty bombs. So that conversation is gone. And I don't think that, the Americans can walk away until that conversation has a resolution. So I think that this will drag out. If I was to give a guess on market pricing, I think $75 on the downside. And then again, the longer this takes over, the higher the probability of a higher price than the 119.48 that we saw, on Sunday. Could it go to 150 if this lasts another 6 weeks or 8 weeks? Yeah. And, the 147 that we saw in the summer of 08 could be passed because of this war and because of the impact. Remember, when you think about the amount of barrels that may not be able to move, 20 million goes through every day, but the Saudis have a solution for 5 to 7 million. They have that pipeline that goes from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea, so they could be starting to logistically do that and then get the ships in place in the Red Sea. And so the only thing they have to be careful about is that the Yemeni Houthis, which are an Iranian proxy, don't decide to go shoot at those ships.
Now, there's talk from the International Energy Agency that they could release across the world something like 400 million barrels of oil that's in reserve. Would that impact prices, or would they just keep charging the same anyway?
Well, 400 million, when you take into account the consumption in Europe, it's maybe, 20 to 30 days of demand. But remember, they're also buying from the United States, and they'd love to buy from Canada. The amount of the release was a record. It's double what they did, versus the Ukraine-Russia situation. I think they haven't told us how much is going to be released, when it's going to be released. The only country that's spoken up so far is Japan, that said they'll release the oil next week. So again, it's how much is available, when it's available, that's going to matter. They were trying to dampen prices with that announcement. But again, as we said earlier, the price of oil went up $4.65 on Wednesday. That day of the announcement. So that doesn't solve the problem. But I think at the end of the day, the pop really occurred because of the concern over the mining and over the potential of terrorist attacks with drones against the California, area.
How many oil fields and refineries have been hit, and is this causing inventory concerns?
Yeah, there's, right now, oil fields, not so much. There was bombing of potential, against Cyprus, against Israel, where they have offshore natural gas, facilities. The big thing has been refineries. You had refineries in Bahrain attacked, in Dubai, refineries by Israel around the Tehran area. The Israeli attacks were because they believe that the fuel for the ballistic missiles was being made there, but it's also a very big hub for the Tehran, has a big population for, gasoline and diesel for that market. So the Americans, from senators to the president and the White House have been telling Israel, stop it. We don't want refineries attacked, because at some point, if there is a change in regime, we want the economy to recover. And if they have to rebuild those refineries, that's going to take longer. Who you attack, what you attack is going to matter. I think the Americans and Israelis are going to have to be in closer contact of what they do. And the key thing is, watch out. We don't want desalinization plants done, because that could be very detrimental to the economies in the area and to the people in the area, of course, if they don't have water to drink. We're under water restrictions here in Calgary because of problems. And, blowing up a desalinization plant is a lot bigger of a deal than us having problems with piping. and the piping can be repaired in weeks. Desalinization plant could take years. So the bottom line is, you know, the Americans now look like they've admitted that the attack where they were attacking in Tehran, and they thought they were hitting a military, and they ended up hitting a school. They now admit that it was an American weapon that that killed those people. So, you know, we have friendly fire and war, and you know, sometimes the highly you know, technology weaponry can go off, and you know, it could have been misdirected by a defensive weapon of Iran, and then went in the wrong direction. Nobody will know, but it's a sad problem that happens in war.
With Venezuela now shipping oil to the U.S., do you see any U.S. production concerns?
Well, Venezuela is going to be a winner here. They were producing about 900,000, a month ago once the Americans took over. Chevron is bringing more into the United States to the refineries there. Venezuela might be able to get to 1.2, 1.3 sometime in the next few months. But after that, it's going to require a lot of capital to rebuild. But Halliburton, Schlumberger, Baker Hughes, all the service industries want to come in. But they need the rule of law. They need to know that if the money they put in goes in, that they'll be able to get a return on that, that they won't be expropriated again. Exxon's been expropriated twice, so they're gun-shy on that. So I think that you know, Venezuela has a lot of upside given the reserves they have of heavy oil, which can go into the refineries on the Gulf Coast and refineries in Asia. But the amount won't be 2-3 million barrels, not for a long time. I think if you want to be an optimist, you might say 1.5 million by the end of the year, up from 900,000 now. In terms of U.S. production, higher oil prices at some point may attract the companies, you know, like to drill tier one wells, you know, $65-$75 oil was sufficient. Tier two wells probably needed $85-$90 U.S. So given we might see an $80 price environment after the war, that might give the incentive to the industry to drill up tier two inventory. And so tier two becomes tier one, tier three becomes tier two. The higher the price goes, the more inventory you have, because the economics work. You know, if you have smaller fields and less productive wells, the higher the price goes, the more economic they are. And so the United States, you know, the data that came out today on their production, I'm just going to see if I can pull it out. The U.S. produced 13.7 million barrels of crude oil. That's up 103,000 from a year ago, from 13.6. But when you add in the natural gas liquids, they're producing 9.99. So all in, they're producing 23.6 of liquids, and they're consuming 21.2. So exports last week were 3.4 million barrels. So the U.S. is exporting the lighter crudes that they have coming in, from Permian, and they're importing the heavies from Canada. So Canada, if you look at some of the oil sands, SAGD names like Strathcona, those stocks have had a fabulous run in the last couple weeks.
Is the spike in the price of oil likely to have any long-lasting effects on consumers and the global economy?
That's the worry. The longer it lasts, the more impact it'll have. It's not in the CPI, PPI, you know, PCE deflator numbers that we've seen. So that's going to hit in the next month or two in the data. Again, if inflation goes up, then you worry about stagflation, which is getting more and more pronouncement in the media. And if you look at the long-term bond, the U.S. long-term bond has gone up 10 beeps from 410 to 420 just in the last week. So, you know, if it goes above 431, which was the high for the year, that would be disconcerting. There's also a problem, not only in you know, because of the war, but the private credit debt problem is there. A lot of companies have stopped, who are provider as a product, have stopped redemptions or limited redemptions. They've sold assets at big discounts. So just like we had with the subprime problem in 2008, we may be having a big problem in private debt. And private debt is like, I think, $1.3 trillion world. And the insurance companies are active in there. You know, BlackRock is involved in there. You know, Blackstone's involved in there. You know, all the companies are there, and it could be pretty serious at some point. You know, junk bond spreads are widening. So, you know, we don't need a war and then a credit crisis. And there's two things to keep an eye on now.
Is the availability of diesel a concern?
Well, it matters where. You know, the United States and Canada know, but if you're in Asia, product is a lot of it's imported in many of those countries because they don't have their own supply. So will the United States, you know, put a limit on exports of gasoline particularly because they want to keep prices cheap domestically? Or will they continue to provide exports of product as well as crude oil? And countries in, you know, like India and China may say, okay, to the refiners, don't export your product. We need it in the country. So could there be a problem for diesel? For importers that do not have their own refineries and import from the countries that decide to limit exports, yes, that would be a problem.
What about the availability of kerosene used to fuel jets?
Well, jet fuel is again, it's a byproduct, it's a high-priced, high-profitable margin for the refiners. And yes, if you're a country that's an importer, and we do start seeing limits of supply. Could the price go up 50%? Could the price, if the war lasts into April, I would bet the price of oil is 120, 130 for Brent and just so below that for WTI. The two of them have narrowed significantly because Brent, you have limits of availability, while WTI still has, you know, exports. So we've even seen days where WTI has traded above Brent, which has not happened for a long time. I'd be keeping an eye on all of that. And if it lasts a month, we're looking at 120s. And if you look at and say, okay, it continues into the summer, which I sure hope it doesn't, if Iran is still able to fly drones into, you know, today they hit, a couple of ships that were, carrying non-crude oil. So as long as they have drones to attack or they have mines that they can disrupt the waterways, it's a problem.
Between Venezuela and Iran, 20% of the undermarket price oil that China imports is now no longer available to them. Is this likely to cause problems for China?
Yeah, and China, China's still getting their oil from the Middle East because Iran has said, when you're traversing the Gulf, let us know. One, have your transponder on, showing that you're a Chinese vessel, and two, tell us that it's a Chinese vessel. And they may have special wording, secret words to use, so it's not
password,
copied,
yeah.
And they're being allowed to go through. So China so far is not seeing a disruption of their supply. And if they're sending warships into the area to protect and have convoys, the other thing is the Chinese have asked Iran, could you please allow Qatar natural gas LNG ships to be allowed to go through the waterway because we need them. So Iran has here an issue where, number one, they're getting a good price for their oil because of the spike in the price of oil. Two, they want to keep their biggest customer, Iran, happy. So they may, at some point, allow Qatari LNG to restart up, and that could go through. So do I see China in the end having a problem? No, because they can always go to Russia and say, hey, we got these 200 ships offshore, offshore Singapore and offshore China with crude oil. Hey, we'll buy it, just like India is buying 30 million.
Water infrastructure, the desalination plants, would they be a strategic target?
that would be the most strategic target, because water is in short supply throughout the Middle East, and desalinization plants is the only way they get their water. There's been, theories of bringing icebergs in in the past, but, never went anywhere. To get water there that quickly to meet the needs is difficult. So if Bahrain loses theirs, or Dubai or Saudi Arabia or any of these countries, they're going to be in really bad shape. And, the repercussion of that would be these countries right now said, we're only going to be, defensive, protecting our assets. But if you attack our water sources, or attack our civilian population, we may go back and attack you. So, this is a desperate move by Iran. And if they push too hard and do something stupid, all of a sudden they could have the Arab countries, who have had a history of, not being friendly to the Persian Empire in the past. And of course, the Sunni-Shia issue, we could see them join with the United States and Israel against Iran. That would be a stupid move on Iran's part, so I hope they're not that stupid.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, what's the best case scenario for Iran to end the war and turn Iran into a good Middle East neighbor?
Well, I'll give you two scenarios. One where the regime tries to stay in power and they agree to give up their nuclear material to the UN, the UN group that handles nuclear and inspections, etc. And they agree to not severely punish the protesters and their civilian population. That would be the scenario where they could stay in power, and the IRGC would keep their wealth, keep the control of the industrial might of Iran. But again, the new supreme leader has a bullseye on his back, and he's also angry. He lost his father, he lost his mother, he lost his wife, he lost his son. He got injured. Some say he was injured in his foot. For them to want to acquiesce and do that best case, as I mentioned, where they stay in power, I don't see that. The case that I think is the most logical is the Americans with Israel and maybe some of the Middle East Arab countries destroy sufficiently the IRGC that the IRGC degrading allows the Artesh, which was the traditional military, which has more manpower than the IRGC, but the IRGC is where the government gave a lot of the money, the weapons, the control of the industrial sector. But if the Americans have been making overtures to the Artesh military leaders, and they decide at some point that the IRGC has been degraded sufficiently, they can take the risk and fight them, and then ask them to surrender or else, then that's the scenario that would then mean that there would be a new government and the military would be there until there were free elections, and the new government could say, we're going to give up our nuclear weapons, we're not going to oppress our own people, we're going to end terrorism against other countries. That would be the best case scenario, but the probability is a question mark.
What could all of this mean for OPEC?
Well, people are wondering about OPEC, maybe losing its power. In some ways, I think that OPEC is going to be stronger because of this, because in the end, Iran is going to want to be part of OPEC, assuming, we get a resolution with the leadership there. There are massive reserves in the Middle East. And if the price is high enough, right now a lot of the revenue coming in for many of the countries, be it Nigeria, Libya, Algeria, they're spending that money on day-to-day things, graft, and the social services, the military, and all of that. If we see prices $20 higher, so in other words, you know, let's say instead of 70 Brent, 90 Brent, that's going to generate a lot of revenue, and then they can spend some of that money developing new reserves and increase production. And if demand continues to grow at 1.2, 1.3 million barrels a day per year heading into the end of the decade, remember, the growth is not going to come from the OECD. The growth is going to come from the emerging world, where they're going to be able to bring on copper, nickel, aluminum, rare earths, all the things we need for that digital economy, AI economy, you know, the data centers. So I think that, you know, if the growth comes from those countries and they're going to demand and need more energy, if the efficiency and profitability of the projects for new copper mines, lithium mines, or whatever is there, the people who are working there are going to want a better quality of life. Remember, 2 billion people out of 7 billion in the world do not have running water, do not have electricity in their homes. And so they're going to want, if you want to build a copper mine in their country and have them work in it, they're going to need to get more quality of life. And that's going to require a lot more energy, both oil and natural gas and renewables.
If lower oil prices are in the future, could this be a concern for the Alberta oil sands?
Well, you know, supply and demand, you know, was in balance in 2025. The data that came out from OPEC today showed that there was a decline, I think, of 4.4 million barrels a day in global inventories because demand was greater. Again, remember, that's a winter quarter. And I think that, as I mentioned at the start, I think in Q2 we're going to see that OPEC production is not growing, and by Q3 global inventories are coming down. We know global inventories are coming down now, and so if this could mean that there will be a higher price point, and the oil sands, need not just a good price, but they also need information and knowledge of how carbon is going to be treated, carbon pricing is going to be treated. As you may have seen, CNQ announced this week that they were going to delay a project, Jackpine, I think was the name, and it was a $7-8 billion job project, because they don't have any clearance from the federal government. So Carney, you know, is telling the world, hey, we'll be able to give you more natural gas, and, you know, let's do business, and, you know, we can sell it to Asia, we can sell it to Europe. Well, the problem is the industry is not going to spend the money unless they have a clear understanding of the regulatory environment and the economics, and pipelines won't get built unless that's clear. New projects like CNQs won't get built. More LNG plants won't get built. So until the Canadian government clarifies that, we're in a limbo. So as I said, CNQ said no more, other companies like Strathcona have projects that they can grow, but they need the same answers.
What's the latest on rig data?
Well, you know, rig data, you know, is showing again that the rig count is down. But again, this is before the war, and companies don't make a decision on a dime to change. So their programs are set months in advance. So this is based on that $55, $65 price world. So the U.S. rig count, it was 551 last week, down 6.9%. But interestingly, in the mix, there's a big difference. Oil was 411 rigs versus 486, down 15.4 because of the price, but because NGLs, because of LNG exports, the gas count was 132 rigs, up from 101. In Canada, our rig count, we had lost 9, 205 versus 234, so down 12.4%. But we're heading into spring break, and so companies, if they finish their drilling program that they had in the winter, they're not going to do anything until after breakup. And again, for them to decide that they're going to spend more money, they're going to have to see LNG running at full capacity, which it's moving to do. And, they've had days when they were close to shipping the full 2 BCF. And then they're going to want to see more go-ahead, high enough prices. So if you look at the Canadian rig count, gas rig count was 65 versus 64, but the oil rig count was 139 versus 170, so it's down 18.2%. So the Canadian rig count is problematic.
Natural gas moved higher when oil spiked higher. What are your thoughts on natural gas moving forward?
Well, today I think NYMEX was 314, U.S. 314 for NYMEX. Canada, I think we were $1.75 heading to $2. I think we were at $2 today, Canadian. The Canadian side needs $2.50 minimum, probably $3 to incentivize spending to grow production. And we need the LNG export market running well. So I'm optimistic about natural gas, and I think natural gas prices will go higher in the second half of 26, both in the States and in Canada. More LNG plants are coming on in the U.S. Demand is growing from data centers. In Canada, we're going to have increases from full time of LNG Canada, hopefully at 2 BCF. We have other projects that are moving close to completion, there's more demand from data centers, from the chemical industry up in the Fort Saskatchewan area. So we could see Canadian prices move up, and $2.50 is not a good number. You need to have a three handle.
Has this spike in the price of crude and the move higher in natural gas been good for stocks?
Oh, it's been fabulous for the oily names. Many of them are trading at 52-week highs. Many of them have doubled from the April lows that we talked about in 2025 when I said we had a table pounding buy. I think we've even had some that have tripled. So it's been a fabulous opportunity there. Some natural gas with liquids production have had very good performance as well. And so I think that the sector's had a great run. If I'm right that we do see the war ending and the price of oil goes back down into the 70s, we'll probably see a correction in the sector. And I think that's going to be the next great buying opportunity. So while we love the sector longer term, we've had such a great run that some of the stocks, I think, are ahead of where they should be based on the current fundamentals. And so we've suggested that if you have a stock that you had a 4% or 5% position in and it's doubled or tripled, all of a sudden you've got 12 to 15% weighting, that's not good. You know, it's like the old days when people had Nortel, or Research in Motion. You know, when you get a weighting that's so big, you've got to pare it down and take your cost out at least. So we've been advising people to, when you have these disproportionate moves and you have overweighting, it's only prudent from a portfolio point of view to pare down the positions. We ourselves are doing it we had one position that had done so well that it was overweighted, and we took and harvested gain.
So far in 2026, crude oil and silver have both spiked to the $120 range. Any thoughts on what might run up next?
Ooh, that's a good one. Uranium is probably going to see, a big move. I'd also be thinking fertilizer, because if there's going to be water problems in the Middle East product can't come out of the Middle East, you've seen Nutrien have a really good run. You've seen some of the American companies that are in the fertilizer business do very, very well. I think uranium is going to become more important. I think people are going to want these small modular reactors, so that's going to be a big positive. But I think that the one that's lagged, is natural gas. And, you look at the efficiency of the molecules, natural gas should go a lot higher. So when we're talking about stocks to our subscribers, we're saying make sure you have a good weighting towards natural gas in your energy portfolio. We do. We have that. And if we see, the cool off after the war is over and stocks give you another buying opportunity, we'll be sending out another SCR action alert buy with some new names and reiterating which ones are the best buys and bargains, just like we did in April. And, you remember we spent a lot of time talking about the bargains then and how cheap stocks were. We've had a good run in stocks. They may be, on all of the technical measures, they're overbought. But again, oil is overbought, but it doesn't mean it can't get more overbought. So that's why the only, you know, if traders may take a different approach, but I think that for investors, if you have an overweighted position and it's done very well, prudent portfolio management says maybe pull down that position to a normal position so that you don't have the risk of giving it all back.
Where can our listeners follow you and subscribe to the Schachter Energy Report?
Yeah, I think right now is a fabulous time for people to get involved in, you know, with our product, especially, you know, given we probably have a better dynamic in the years ahead because of what's happened here with the invasion, the Iraq war, the Iran war, sorry. Thinking Iraq, I might be George Bush. I think that the stocks are still cheap, but they can get, a lot higher, you know, multiples higher, because they can go from, you know, let's say right now trading at 1P to 2P, which means, you know, they could, that, you know, reserves could double. You add in higher commodity prices, that means, you know, the value of the reserves is worth more. And on a cash flow basis, companies are trading at, you know, 3-4 times cash flow. At the top of the cycle, they traded 8-10 times cash flow, so there's a big there. But then if you have higher commodity prices, that helps out. And then if you have higher production, then that helps out. So if you go to, what we're telling people is, when I talk about how bullish I am and how much upside I see, they think I'm crazy. Well, they said the same thing to gold, people supporting the gold sector 2 years ago, you know, when stocks were nobody cared about. And, of course, $5,200 gold changed everything. And the gold stocks have had, you know, 5 and 10 baggers in many cases. Just go back to your favorite stocks that were around in the 1999-2008 cycle, be it C&Q or whatever, and just look at how they did and how much they went up during that period of time. There's going to be corrections, and you'll see that on the C&Q chart. And what my job with the team here at Schachter Energy Research is, when those corrections occur and we see an oversold condition and stocks are at bargain levels, highlight that by sending out an action alert, an SER action alert to our clients. So for people who have seen how much money can be made in the sector and they want an independent source of research, then just go to www.schachterenergyreport.ca. We have a quarterly subscription or an annual subscription. So if you want to just test it, you know, go to the quarterly. Once you're comfortable with it, the economics say go to the annual. We also have quarterly webinars. And then the one other thing that we've talked about in the past is we have annually FaceTime with the managements of, you know, 40 companies at a conference we call Catch the Energy. And that's held at Mount Royal University in Calgary on Saturday, October 17th. We have companies having presentation slots, and then they're at their booths. So people can go up to the CEOs of many companies, many of them that they own will be there, and have FaceTime. And again, you know, with AGMs changing, and most of them are just video, and they do mostly legal and no presentation, having FaceTime with the companies you own will give you a higher comfort to own them. And if you have any questions, the managements are very, very happy to respond to them. And so, you know, we have Birchcliff there, we have Tourmaline there, we have, you know, so many Advantage, we have so many good companies there that you'll have a chance to speak to. And I think that's really added value that we do as part of our product line.
Joseph, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure as always.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. You can find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.